This is The Stark Truth, hosted by Robert Stark, brought to you by StarkTruthRadio.com. Robert Stark is an American journalist and political commentator. You can listen to his podcast at www.StarkTruthRadio.com.
This is Robert Stark. I'm joined here with Brandon Adamson, Constantine von Hoffmeister, and Ashley Messinger. Great having you guys on the show.
Hi.
Yeah, hello.
Hey, guys.
So we're going to be discussing the kind of having a roundtable discussion about the left of the alt-right. I don't know what it's called these days, whether it's the alt-left, left wing of the alt-right, or the alt-center, but just kind of that general scene. And Brandon wrote this manifesto a while back called A Clockwork Green Shirt, a manifesto for the alt-left. And I've already discussed this with Brandon before, but Constantine, you read over it, and I'm curious to kind of get what your thoughts are.
I would say I'm pretty much in total agreement with it. I would say, like, 99.9%. So I could subscribe it. Well, I could sign it. Yeah, I agree with most of what he says, pretty much everything he says. So it makes perfect sense to me, and basically, if you could call it a manifesto, it reflects my own views. So, yeah, I support it.
Yeah, likewise. I remember Nick Land tweeted something out, link to the site, altleft.com, and he said something to the effect of, you know, that he seemed bewildered by it, you know, like, I don't understand the niche for this. Isn't this just what countercurrents is? And of course, yeah, the principal difference between, he's talking about the economic leftism, obviously, but I think the principal difference between countercurrents and people like us is that countercurrents people are usually socially conservative as well, sometimes very much so. The prohibition,
yeah.
Well,
and all.
I would describe it.
I mean, it's also just like it's overall more, I think, more cultural differences, I think,
yeah.
Is a big part of it, and just all kind of just a general outlook. So, like, I mean, Land doesn't really see the nuance of it because he sees, like, you know, he just looks at the fact that if there's any kind of racial component in it, but it's basically just alt-right plus, like, you know, with the economics, like you said.
Yeah, I would basically describe it as a social nationalism, but without the hardcore social conservatism and radical traditionalism, because if you look at the now-defunct Trad Youth movement, or Trad Youth Network, they were basically social nationalists, but they were, like, radical traditionalist and hardcore social conservatives. So it's basically social nationalism, but without those hardcore social conservative and radical traditional elements.
You mean
right.
Basically, they're not as neurotic.
Exactly.
Well, the Trad Youth actually did a post that was basically attacking me at some point. I mean, because you have to keep in mind, for those that are new listening, like, I mean. Like, I wrote this, like, almost 3 years ago, so it's like, it's from 2015, so it's not like, it was before all, like, you know, Trump mentioned an alt-left or all of this other stuff. It was, like, it was before, way before all of that. So, but yeah, back when it originally came up with the site, it was, I think, out of frustration of, you know, there not really being, you know, anything not really fitting into to the alt-right as it was developing, and now what we see what it has developed into, that's like it's even more so the case.
What do you mean by that? What do you mean by that it's more so the case? What's more so the case?
Well, exactly. several years ago, the alt-right had not really been, defined as much as it is now. Like, the belief system had not been, it was kind of like a loose group of people that just didn't fit into the mainstream, right? That was for various reasons, and I think it became more defined and more associated with certain memes, and it had now it has more of a defined dogma to it, you know, that's kind of...
But what is the dogma? Where is this dogma? I'm not sure that's true, because where's the manifesto of the alt-right, or where's the dogma? Like, who decides what the dogma is?
It's not so much that
there is a set manifesto. There's just a consensus that has emerged.
Yeah, but what is the consensus?
On various issues.
But we need to define the consensus. What is the consensus exactly?
Well, I think a consensus is that that freedom is basically bad. That the Enlightenment is kind of a mistake. There's a net negative. Pornography is bad. Masturbation is bad. Alcohol should be illegal.
Who said that? Richard?
I don't know.
Said masturbation is bad or pornography is bad? I mean,
Countercurrents has had numerous articles on. You had an article promoting prohibition, like bringing back prohibition.
Countercurrents keeps distancing itself from the alt-right. They keep saying that they're not alt-right, they're the new right.
You can find the same thing on altright.com. I've been followed for years by all of the major alt-right figures, and when we interviewed Richard Spencer, you know, he kind of indicated that there was a place for kind of environmentalism and things like that in the alt-right, but not any kind of social liberalism, and just the Daily Stormer. You can go down all of these sites, you'll find it now.
You're saying it's more on the social issues and economics, because there's a very strong streak on the alt-right that is economically populist, or in some cases socialist, like National Socialist. So your main disagreement with the alt-right is over cultural and social issues?
Cultural and social issues, and also they're wanting to go back to certain time periods, and almost kind of like a mythologizing certain areas or certain eras as being things that we need to get back to, and it's just like the whole thing, it became almost totally devoted to like traditionalism and fighting degeneracy and that sort of thing. When it was a loose amount of people, there was less of a consensus, and as a consensus was developing, people were being like, oh, so this is what it is then, okay, I'm out. Like that's kind of what basically happened.
Well,
I don't know. I'm with Jim Gold on this one. He wrote an essay recently in Taki Mag, so I agree with him about the topic of degeneracy. It's like degeneracy per se is not a bad thing.
We'll get to all these different topics. I want to kind of keep it in kind of this like ordered manner based on my outline. So I want to get to the basics and how this scene evolved. So there is a blogger named Robert Lindsay, and he's been blogging. He's been around like far before the alt-right even existed. I talked to him. I first communicated with him way back in 2010, which was far before the alt-right got started. So Robert Lindsay And he used to comment on sites like American Renaissance. I've seen some of his posts from way back in like 2008, so he's been around for a long time. And he was describing himself as a liberal race realist. For a while, he was kind of friendly with some alt-right types and social nationalist types. And he's written some very kind of controversial articles about race realism. But the thing is that more recently, since the election of Trump, and I'm not necessarily a super pro-Trump, but that sort of caused him to break ways with anyone who's remotely alt-right, including basically the sort of left wing of the alt-right. And I've talked to Robert Lindsay about this.
Why doesn't he like Trump?
Because he's an economic leftist and Trump is an uber capitalist. But the thing about Robert Lindsay is his views is that he views the whole demographic transformation as inevitable, so he would rather focus on the class issues, the economic issues. So he views groups like blacks and Hispanics as more economically left-wing, so he's more interested in fighting the class struggle than the whole sort of trying to reverse the demographic transformation, which he views as inevitable.
Well, there's this divide between American white nationalists who want to, quote-unquote, retake America, and then there are separatists, like people who cite these statistics about the number of people in who would like to see their state secede and this kind of thing. So that's interesting.
I think it's a more likely scenario of anything. You can't take America back
as
a whole. So it needs to be broken up, needs to be balkanized. Maybe you can have a white ethnostate in the Northwest, maybe, you know, like some people fantasize about. Could be a possibility, maybe. But retaking America, yeah, it's impossible. So I would agree with Lindsay on that one. I think it's an inevitability because it's already past the point of no return.
Yeah. I don't know if the United...
I would agree.
Yeah.
And then, to kind of expand on the alt-left, so then Brandon went and started his website called altleft.com, the left wing of the alt-right, and he actually got picked up in some major news publications. That was around the time that Fox News was saying that the alt-left is like the Antifa. And then all these people started like Googling Brandon's site, altleft.com.
Yeah.
And one mainstream journalist, I forget the publication, but Brandon, you can elaborate on this, actually plugged his website.
Well, actually, I mean, a lot of them did. It was featured in Salon, Der Spiegel, I think, and it's Huffington Post. You know, there's a bunch more. I think I had a list of them somewhere that mentioned it, but Forbes was another one that mentioned it. And I don't know, I found it pretty amusing at the time because... you know, it was just like an overwhelming amount of publicity for, you know, something that I never really publicized very much. And there was like, it was just very amusing to read the articles because the people are going Googling looking for like this alternative left, like Antifa type deal. And they come across my site. So the articles are like all like the troubling origins of, you know, the alt left. You know, just because, you know, people are just like horrified by it.
Or maybe we can just call ourselves a liberal fascist, like the Jonah Goldberg book.
Yeah.
But like the so yeah, there was that, and then I actually didn't really get much hate from it. I think just part of it is because my site is so like esoteric that people just don't even know what to make of it, so they don't it doesn't emotionally you know, invoke any kind of fear or anything. They're just like, what the fuck is this? Like,
yeah. Like, I've pretty much gotten the same reaction from my site. I think I've maybe had like one incident where someone refused to come on my show. But for the most part, my website is like so esoteric that most people who are closed-minded are just utterly flabbergasted. But anyhow, back to kind of the whole alt-left scene. So then there was this whole alt-left scene that kind of revolved around the blogger Ryan England and the YouTuber Prince of Queens and their economic leftist who are very critical of political correctness and SJWs. And in some ways there are some kind of parallels to the alt-right scene, but I would say there's sort of an economically leftist parallel to the alt-right because they're civic nationalist, they're against political correctness, and they're left-wing economically. And some of the, Brandon and I are.
Well, they're like the alt-right, but without like the conservative or libertarian economics. With it,
yeah,
that's what they are. They're like, you know, like Milo or one of those kind of people. But if Milo wasn't a Republican, if he was like had more of a socialist economic program.
So both Brandon and I are on pretty much good terms with Ryan England and Prince of Queens, but there have been a few people in that scene who have actually said that, like, Brandon Adamson, and I think even they've gone as far as to say that Robert Lindsay is, like, too offensive to be accepted in their scene.
Oh, yeah, a lot of them have, but, and here's the thing, like, I think the crux of their, you know, their disagreement, and one which I kind of, I understand and I relate to, is that those kind of people, they think that that we shouldn't talk about race at all, or any kind of identity politics, and that we should focus on class instead. And I'm totally sympathetic to that argument, but the problem that I have with it is that there's no, and this is why I don't like Jordan Peterson, is because there's no reciprocity with that. It's for the most part, it's only white people that have any interest in promoting any kind of colorblindness or getting away from identity politics. Like, so they're not, there's no reciprocity. So if we're going to have like where we just focus on class, well, I can't be the only one focusing on that. If these people aren't interested, I have to recognize that.
And yeah, even if you go back to like Robert Lindsay's whole focus on the economic side and fighting for economic social justice against the 1%, if you look at Bernie Sanders' movement, which was a left-wing populist movement, that was a sort of a disproportionately white movement.
Well, it was, but also he, let's not forget that like Bernie still embraces all of the Black Lives Matter and that identity stuff.
Well, yeah,
so that's
sure.
Why he attracts those he attracts those people. So he isn't moving toward getting away from identity politics or getting away from these grievance politics. So it's like I said, my problem with it, I'm sympathetic to it in theory, but if these other people aren't reciprocating or aren't responsive to it, that's like that's reality that we have to take into consideration.
The thing is that almost, and this is quite funny, is that almost all political philosophies that are based on some kind of abstract principle, whether it's I don't know, communism or transhumanism, futurism, environmentalism, socialism, any of these things, they all tend to be dominated by whites. With non-white groups, it tends to just be this, or the racial nationalism thing, like black racial nationalism, with exceptions, obviously, like I guess there is Bushido, but for the most part, with these types of philosophies, you know, 99 times out of 100, you can basically thank a white person.
Yeah, basically a lot of these, you're talking about like these kind of SWPL cultural values, things like environmentalism, new urbanism, animal rights, all those kind of things are sort of implicitly white, and I think what is unique about the whole sort of the alt-center left-wing of the alt-right or alt-left scene is it takes those things, adopts those things from the left, but but then it mixes them up with certain aspects of middle class white populism from the right, because your mainstream liberal is into all that SWPL stuff, but at the same time they're very much going to be pro-immigration, pro-multiculturalism. So it is this kind of fusionism of sort of acknowledging the implicit whiteness of all those SWPL things, which are great things, but then mixing it with a sort of more like middle class white populism from the right.
Yeah, well,
go ahead.
I just don't understand. Like, okay, so Robert Lindsay is interested in, say, social justice against the 1%, etc. Like, everybody should unite based on class, not on race, not on ethnicity. I just don't understand this. Well, okay, I can understand that. Okay, you have like a multicultural society, multiracial country, America today, so people should work together to achieve something. But what I don't understand is like this insane idea that the left has today, that they really want to force multiculturalism and they want more immigrants, like at all costs we must have more brown people, you know. It's very neurotic, and I don't understand how that's connected to any kind of struggle against the 1%, because like forcing the immigrants into the country actually only benefits the 1% and doesn't benefit the working class at all.
Yeah, I agree with you.
It's like schizophrenia. It's like,
yeah, yeah.
These people are mentally ill.
Like, I agree with you 100%. And obviously, the mainstream left is they completely ignore that. They're utterly insane. Robert Lindsay, he gets that, and Robert Lindsay he supports like a dramatic reduction in immigration and cracking down on illegal immigration. He's just, his attitude is like, all that stuff, like, there's not a whole lot we can do, so we might as well just sort of accept is that it's not, he doesn't see it as politically feasible to, say, have a moratorium on immigration, so he would rather just focus on getting a progressive socialist politicians elected.
But the majority of Americans don't want more immigration. So how can he say it's not politically feasible to say that, when the vast majority of American citizens don't want more immigration? I would think it's completely politically feasible. That's why Trump got elected, because it's politically feasible.
The majority is not enough. In the way that the United States system works, like, having a majority doesn't really get you jack shit. Like, you need it to be like 80 to 90%.
I understand this, the president basically has no power anyway, because Trump really can't do anything. Like, he can't build the wall, he can't mass deport people like he promised, so basically he has no power.
Right, you have judges.
Because it's a dysfunctional system you have in America, because it is ridiculous, checks and balances. So basically you don't have one central source of power that can say we're going to do this and that's it. Because you say, oh, president says I'm going to do it, but then some asshole judge in Hawaii or Kansas, some provincial judge says, oh, you can't, and then he can't, and that's it. Because it's like some...
And the Congress, like, just having a majority in Congress won't... You can't pass your legislation, and even Trump even mentioned this, that in the Senate, you need 60 votes in order to break a filibuster, which they can... used to stop any kind of legislation that they don't want. So really, you need and even like the majority. That's, keep in mind that like the Republicans have a majority in Congress, but it's like not all of those Republicans are against immigration. Probably only like, you know, maybe half of them have any kind of strong opinion on it at all. Like, so.
Exactly. Yeah. Right. No, I agree. So basically, it's a dysfunctional system. It sucks. Democracy. You can't get anything done. Basically, since the democratic, so-called democratic system doesn't work.
Yeah, we do need to severely limit democracy.
Basically, you need a brutal dictatorship, because it's a time of crisis, like in Rome. You know, you need a tyrant. Like, I'm not even joking. Like, what the Romans, you need a tyrant to rule and make all the decisions, and people to shut the fuck up and listen to him, because otherwise, everything will go down the drain.
Well, the Romans
people have described like fascism in the past as like as a kind of like immune system that kicks in at a certain point. That it's like, you know, it's almost like the system, its immune system, where at a certain point it just kicks in and just like, you know, knocks out everything, and then it ends up like overextending itself and then starting over. And I think that's like you almost kind of see that.
Well, the problem, with having a king or a dictator is maybe you get lucky and you get a benevolent dictator who accomplishes all these great things, but you could also get a horrible tyrant.
No,
I think the best case scenario would be to have basically what Robert Heinlein advocates, which is a democracy, but where there are severe restrictions on who is a
limited franchise.
Yeah, exactly. So basically you have to prove that you have a stake in society in order to have a say. And it's just this whole idea of getting a mass democracy and having as many people vote as possible is just, it's just utterly insane. You want the best people.
Don't understand. It's grotesque. Just yesterday I was reading, like in Kansas, again, some judge said, oh, the state of Kansas can't demand proof of citizenship when people vote. It's like, it's grotesque. It's like, what? It's bizarre to me. I just don't understand it. So basically any idiot can walk into the polling station and just, you know, it's like vote without showing any kind of ID, driver's license, national ID, whatever, like nothing. That's it, or passport, no, just that's it. So basically, all the illegals that live in Kansas can just walk in and vote. It's very strange to me. I don't understand the system, to be honest. It's like self-defeating, the system. And nobody seems to want to change it, and everybody loves it. You know, this is very bizarre to me. And nobody really can explain to me, like, why is it so? Like, how can a judge rule that a state cannot demand proof of citizenship when this person votes?
Brandon, would you say that the whole kind of left wing of the alt-right scene is basically economic populism, but mixed in with kind of a cultural elitism?
Hmm. Well, I don't know. Maybe. I think I wouldn't put some kind of like real rigid restriction on that. Like, I don't care. I mean, let's not overcomplicate things, really. I think that, like, for people that have been associated with the alt-right for a long period of time, it's just kind of like, you know, almost anyone, I think, could relate to this. When you're in these groups, you see that there's really, you know, the culturally, you find that you have, like, very little in common with so many of the people that are associated with it, and, so it's just a means of expressing ideas, like with people that you like. And so if you're associated with the alt-right for any length of time, you will eventually, I think, become disillusioned that it's like, gosh, like, you know, would you even want to live with any of these people? I think that actually interacting on social media with the alt-right and in all of these various groups that they, I actually became way more left-wing than I ever was when I got into this, like, just because of, just how awful the people are and how insane so many of them are.
Yeah, I can relate to that, but the thing is, like, I'm naturally a contrarian, so if I'm with I want to kind of, like, challenge the social norms of that group. I want to kind of, Brandon and I have talked about this before. I'll ask Constantine. Constantine, you were telling me that you don't like skinhead culture because it's very, very low class. But what are your thoughts on Fash Wave, which is more futuristic?
Well, it's more aesthetically pleasing, of course. I don't know. I just skinhead culture seems a bit too primitive for me. I just don't find it aesthetically appealing. And I don't understand how anybody can find it aesthetically appealing. But I guess it goes back to like some sort of like primal urge and sort of like these proletarian types, factory workers, also like football hooligans. I can see why they would be attracted to it. So I can see some some benefit in having skin and culture around, sort of like the muscle of the movement, street fights, etc. So I think it can be useful, so should not be discarded. I just personally don't like the looks of it. It's a personal thing. So Fashwave, I like a sort of like an 80s retro look. I'm a big fan of the 80s. So yeah, it's more optimistic, and because it's more futuristic, it's also very Faustian, to the stars, towards the future, goes upwards, and not just like some level plane like skinhead culture.
I basically agree.
But Ashley, you were saying that you like the 80s retrofuturism, but you're also a big fan of like deco punk.
Yeah, and steampunk as well. I've been called a Victorian leftist on a couple of occasions, like by some people, which is kind of funny. But yeah, I'm interested in that period aesthetically.
Yeah, retrofuturism seems to be a big aesthetic preference in our scene. With Brandon, you're more into the kind of 60s mod to kind of 70s retrofuturism, like Logan's Run and even Planet of the Apes, and mid-century space age.
I like more like the late 70s, early 80s, like Logan's Run. That kind of aesthetic. I do think it's interesting though that so many like people in the alt right don't really see the contradiction, and they embrace like this fash wave and vaporwave and sort of in that kind of art, and yet they don't. Yet they're such like hardcore traditionalists that they hate any kind of modern or postmodern art, whereas like that's clearly an art form that's, you know, not representational, you know, it's abstract in some ways. So it's interesting to me that they embrace that while claiming, you know, to want to return to like the Renaissance art in like Little House on the Prairie culture and all of that. So I find it interesting that they embrace that. They don't really see the contradiction.
And another thing about the whole scene is there's a strong artistic emphasis of artistic figures, so including artists, musicians, and writers. So Brandon, you're a writer, an artist, and a musician. I'm an artist and a writer. A number of other people in the scene are also I think Paul Pillater is a writer and a musician. He kind of has his own project with Asian Aryanism, but I would say he's sort of within our circle as well. But I would say a big part of the scene is creative types.
What I've seen is interesting is that nearly everyone that is associated with our scene is the kind of more you know, more liberal kind of spin-off of the alt-right is that they're all artists and all of the creative people, whereas in the actual alt-right you have like very few of those kind of people. But if you look at you know, the 10 or 20, you know, Harlan Venison and all of these other people, they're all novelists and writers and artists. It's kind of like it's almost 100% of them are within our sphere.
And with like back to Fashwave, like I totally love the Fashwave aesthetic. It's awesome, but the alt-right did not create that. They're sort of borrowing from the existing and new retrowave aesthetic.
Yeah, well, there's. I think that's a good point, is that for, like, most of us, like, the things we've been doing were kind of on our own. They're not necessarily influenced as much by anything that was trying to be associated with the scene. Like all of the things that I like and that I write about and whatnot were all things that were just associated with my interest previously. It's not the same sense of like we're strictly trying to make like these propaganda memes or something like that. It comes from a different place, and in the alt-right you don't see that as much. The only one of the few like I think interesting or like genuinely creative people is probably like Emily Usis with her animations, as well as maybe like Murdoch, those I think those are probably Murdoch is probably the best thing in the alt-right in terms of art.
Yeah, I mean, I like the music of Excurious, but again, Excurious is a great musician, but he's still, his style of music is, it's awesome, but he's still kind of it's a continuation of that new retrowave scene, which already existed prior to that.
Right.
So, with social issues, obviously, you're a lot more socially liberal. What do you think about this whole concept of degeneracy? Like, what is degeneracy? And is there a concept of good degeneracy versus bad degeneracy?
Well, I think that I'm very lenient when it comes to degeneracy. Like, I mean, I consider myself to be pretty much degenerate. You know, to be by most definitions of any like conservative, for sure. But I think that where I personally draw the line is that things with that are kind of coaxing or experimenting with children, you know, or things that they don't really know that much about psychologically, and then just like so I think that I think that things with children are one thing, and then the other thing that I don't like is when people try to make you believe something that that is just like factually incorrect, and you just have to force to say it. Kind of like you see that with like transgender stuff, where you have to like pretend that this actually is no different than like a biological woman if it's a I don't really care about transgenders one way or the other. If somebody wants to live as a woman, or you know, even if they want you to call them miss or something, fine, whatever, but like let's not pretend that there's no difference, you know. That's kind of like or pretend that there perhaps isn't some mental component of mental illness to this sort of thing. So I don't know, that's like kind of where I draw the line.
When you said children and then being forced to accept things that aren't factually accurate, I thought you were going to go for like the I don't know why, I just had a feeling you were going to go for the use of children to promote propaganda, basically, like with the Florida shooting, that kind of thing. I remember you talking about that.
Well, that was I am opposed to that, but we're talking, you know, strictly here about the concept of degeneracy. So I generally oppose using kids as like as props for political messages that they don't really understand, or that they're being used to basically manipulate people's emotions. Like I don't like that. But when we're talking about the concept of degeneracy, I think that like and anything that really involves children or parents, you know, trying to essentially creating these like weird Frankenstein monsters out of their children, out of some weird ideological or mental illness of the parent. I just think that's like, that's messed up. But when it comes to, you know, whether someone is gay, if they want to be, even like gay marriage and that sort of thing, like I don't care at all. Like like I said, if you if you spend any you know, from the places I lived and had been, like, you know, I'm probably more at home, more comfortable, and would have more fun talking and hanging out with like a room full of gay hairstylists than I would like at an alt-right meetup. You know, I would I would have a much more intelligent conversation with those people.
So, what would you view as an example of good degeneracy?
I don't know. I would say that, like, pornography that's really well written and, you know, has a great script with a lot of eroticism and heightened sexual tension continuity.
Do you have any recommendations?
And
actually,
psychedelic
yeah,
drugs.
Yeah, I mean, I think that the 80s miniseries classic, Taboo American Style, is an excellent film. It's like a four... like a 4 or 5 part miniseries. That's good. Some of the stuff which is very edgy, like by the Italian director Mario Salieri, is also I think very artful. If you can, you know, if you can stomach it, it is kind of edgy because he's Italian. I think the one part I don't really get too invested in is there's a lot of Catholic imagery that's incorporated into that, probably because like he's kind of going against the culture there, so he's kind of, so some of that part I don't really get, but there are a lot of I think a lot of 70s or 80s like American pornography has a lot a lot more artfulness of it, and you will even
like Russ Meyer, for example. Yeah.
Well, I mean, that's kind of like, I mean, that stuff is entertaining. But I mean, like, there's more where the people were trying to do more serious, because the original people involved in that scene, they were, a lot more of them were kind of like struggling actors and directors. Like, they weren't even necessarily looking to get into that. And you can even find, like, there's somewhat of a reactionary culture, even within pornography, where you can see... Paul Thomas, the director, I think did an interview where he said that he can't stand porn today because like the actors that can't act, the directors can't direct, and they don't care about continuity. Like the actresses don't even know to bring the same outfit for, so that you can have continuity for different scenes and things like that. So he was actually like complaining about how, so it's interesting. You have a parallel kind of reactionary culture, even when in these things that are supposedly degenerate, which I find to be kind of interesting. And then that was also kind of the premise behind the film Boogie Nights, right? Whereas the Burt Reynolds character is upset that they're like moving from film to videotape because he considers himself kind of an actual artist, and he doesn't want to just make this cheap shit.
I think the best example of good degeneracy would be the film The Crush with Alicia Silverstone. But the thing is, they had to use a body double for obvious legal logistics, but you'd agree with that.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't I don't find The Crush to be that memorable. I know that you love that movie and you have that fetish for Alicia Silverstone, but I don't really even remember much about it, like, to be honest. I did recall the film Clueless that she was in, and of course that has a number of quotable lines from it because I remember seeing that a zillion times, but The Crush I'm just not as familiar with.
Constantine, have you seen that film?
Yeah, I've seen it a long time ago, though, so I barely remember it. I remember her much better in Batman and Robin as Batgirl, where she played the butler's daughter.
Oh, right.
Yeah, nice costume she had. But the movie was a bit silly. I can't relate to your Silverstone fetish either, because I don't find her that attractive, to be honest.
Well, I can relate to it in a little bit in the sense that I used to live in Hollywood in Los Angeles when I was younger, and so I can relate to these kind of these like young like Jewish actresses and artists and things that really don't look as like as stereotypically so, that they're kind of like the cream of the crop. So that's
like, they're smart
and stuck up and abrasive, and I think that they're like, but they don't really, you know, they don't have the same look as like a caricature from like one of those like the A. Wyatt Mann cartoons, you know, from the 90s of, like, a Jewish girl or something like that. So it's, like, it's kind of, like, and they're all wealthy and come from successful families. So it's kind of, they're kind of, like, the cream. I knew a lot of girls that were like that. Even when I was younger, I obviously didn't even think about the Jewish component or anything like that. But I can relate on that level because I know that you live in California and there's just the girls like that are everywhere. So you probably associate it with some other girls that you've met that were kind of unobtainable or something.
Yeah, in the context of California or Southern California, especially, those kind of girls are the most attractive. Just visiting Europe, I mean, she could easily blend in a place like Austria or Southern Germany. Constantine, growing up in that part of the world, would you say that's accurate?
Yeah, that's accurate. I would say it's true, yes. She wouldn't stick out.
Brandon, in my book, there's that whole scene where Gnome goes into, like, Roger Blackstone's tower, and there's that big lake with all these, like, blonde teens skinny dipping. Do you see that as degenerate, or that is just healthy?
Well, that's good degeneracy.
Yeah, I agree.
As far as I'm concerned, you know? Like, yeah, I mean, like, a bunch of hot chicks, like, skinny dipping in the pool, like, I don't have a, you know, I don't have any problem with that. I'm not, like, a sexual prude or anything like that, so I agree with Heinlein when he said that, like, the human body is not obscene, and that we've kind of been forced to believe that there's really nothing obscene about the human body. That's something that we've been kind of conditioned to believe.
Yeah, that was probably, like, considered normal in, say, Europe 30 years ago, but our society has become a lot more puritanical.
Well, yeah, in, like, Europe, you could find a guy, like, wandering around in, like, a Speedo or something like that. I mean, here, if you saw that, like, people would laugh, and they'd be like, "What, you know, what is this homo doing?" You know, like, it's just kind of a...
But I say skinny dipping and the whole culture of, like, swimming naked or hanging out on the beach naked is still a big thing in Germany now. Like, it's especially in East Germany, it's huge. Like, there's, like, nudist beaches all over the place, and people love it. And if you go to a public pool anywhere in Germany, whether in the East or in the West, they always have the sauna section. But it's always, like, men, women together, everybody naked, walking around, mingling, no problem, nobody cares.
Yeah, I think it's a great thing, but Americans are just
Exactly. Like I said, even if you just saw somebody in a Speedo here, like, that would be cause for, like, you know, what is this guy doing? Like, I don't know if you ever saw that video I took when a guy got kicked out of the mall for where he was wearing a Speedo in the mall, you know, and, like, and, you know, this guy was, like, he was clearly, like, I mean, he was, like, crazy. He actually probably seemed like he actually was, like, a flaming homo, but it was just really, for someone to wear a Speedo into the mall here, it's just, like, it's like an international incident.
Well, in a mall, I mean...
in another country or something like that, it wouldn't be that big deal to see someone, you know, walking down the street, like, wearing something like that.
Yeah, I wouldn't say, but even Europe would be weird, though, to see a guy wearing Speedo on the street. I mean, on the beach, maybe in the pool, but not on a street or in the mall. So, I mean, even there, it would be considered
That is what the... That's what the security guard said to him. He was like, he came up to him and, like, I filmed this, and the guy was like, you know, "Hey man, how's it going? You know, are you going swimming?" And the guy's like, I forget what the guy said, but then the security guard was like, "Well, do you plan to go swimming here?" You know, and then he, like, kicked him out. Like,
like, swimming. I actually, when I was at a Bjorno lake, I saw this old overweight guy in a thong. It kind of reminded me of, like, Borat.
Oh, yeah. It's common, though, this kind of attire in Europe, I think. Yeah, more so than in America. I think we talked about Munich before last time, didn't we? Like, when you walk around Munich in the summertime, like, you have all these people lying around naked in all the parks in the center of Munich. And, like, all the tourists, Japanese tourists, Chinese tourists are walking around taking pictures of them because they just can't believe it. But it's, like, Bavarian tradition, Bavarian culture.
And... that's the thing, is, I mean, Bavaria is actually a very Catholic region. It's...
Yeah, but it's not Protestant, and that's the whole point, because this whole hang-up about with nudity and everything is, like, it's a Puritan thing. It's mostly like a Protestant thing, because I think they have it in Scandinavia and in the U.S., the Protestant countries, and the Britain as well, or England specifically. it's very strange. It's a Protestant thing. It's not a Catholic thing. Because I think in the Catholic countries, they don't have this obsession with, I don't know, condemning sexuality or nudity.
Yeah, I don't think there are any nude beaches in the UK. I couldn't swear to that, but I don't think so.
Yeah, I lived in the UK. I mean, their culture in some ways has more in common with Americans and continental Europe.
Hmm.
But, I mean, there was this photographer named David Hamilton, and he did these, like, art nude photos of teenage girls, and his photographs are very tasteful. They're 100% legal, but he became, like, this total social pariah in the UK, and I think recently he ended up committing suicide, but he was very popular in continental Europe, especially France. Have you heard of him?
I haven't heard of him.
No.
But he became like a big social pariah in the UK. But the thing about England is English culture in a lot of ways reminds me they have a lot of the same values as America.
Yeah, but America is a child of England, so yeah, that's not a really big surprise there.
Right, and you can also see that they're... there's more, like regionally, there's more heavily, the culture is more heavily English in the Northeast and in places that are more the older places of America, whereas Maine and New Hampshire and those places versus the Southwest or Texas.
Well, the Northeast is where the Puritans landed, I think. So, yeah, that would make sense from England.
But the thing is, like, even... in the regions in the Midwest where most people are of, say, German or Scandinavian descent. And Brandon, you're basically from that background. Those people, even though they're from a German or Scandinavian background, they sort of adopted a lot of the Anglo social norms.
Maybe. I mean, the areas that I'm from were heavily German and Italian. And Scandinavian, and I would say that the difference there is actually pretty apparent than if you went to like Virginia or one of those Northern Virginia or one of those places. I think culturally you do see a lot more German and Italian influence, even in social norms. I think that's almost kind of a source of friction between places in the Midwest and the West versus like the East. I think those like a lot of the regional rivalries and things like that test themselves in other like newer ways that are associated with different things. But I think that the origins of those could be more deeply explained by cultural differences from the where the people came from.
So since we were talking about what is considered degenerate and kind of back to our original topic of the left, the alt-right versus the alt-left. So the alt-right says that like modern art is degenerate, but what are some of the long list of things that you've been called a degenerate for, Brandon?
Well, I mean, basically like everything. You know, I mean, any kind of like... support for any kind of like mild feminism, you know, for the ability for like women to speak in public, that sort of thing, for them to be able to be members of movements and have opinions, that, and I mean, for, you know, premarital sex, thinking that masturbation is okay, consumption of alcohol, weed, yeah, I mean, you could go right down the list. If you went through all of the things that that people have said is degenerate, that rock music.
Thing I've actually noticed is, there are problems with certain types of prescription drugs, but I've noticed a lot of people who are right wing politically are. If you mention that you're on any kind of a prescription drugs for any kind of problems like anxiety, they just say they just totally like flip out and say that stuff is like toxic. And
well, a lot of that is like the Alex Jones influence, and I think that one of the problems that of the alt-right is that they to become more popular, they attempt to do things which attract like the low-hanging fruit, you know. So they would do things like promote this kind of stuff, which would appeal to like the lunatics in like Alex Jones's audience and things like that, and then eventually that stuff all creeps in, like the anti-vaccinations and all of that sort of thing. Just the more like the wilder like conspiracy stuff, the false flags and all of that. I think that so yeah, I think that there are like abuses of these prescription drugs. I think that people, doctors are way too quick to prescribe pain medication and anxiety medication and things like that. I think, again, to young people, rather than really taking the time to deal with the underlying issues the person has. So I think that there's an argument for that, but I think just the idea that modern medicine itself is just toxic is just something that's kind of a prevailing view, you know, that they're promoting like this homeopathic crap, you know, and you know, fear of like fluoride and all this. So all of that stuff comes from like pandering to like the Alex Jones audience, and then those people flooding into the alt-right
and just their
bringing
kind
that crap
of
with them.
Belief that anything that's artificial is automatically bad.
yeah, which, you know, we've been over this before, but I don't even really consider the concept of something being artificial to be really all that valid, because it's still you know, everything, whether humans built it or not, it still stems from the natural world. If humans figure out how to make something and ingest it, like, well, that's, you know, that's something that humans can do as a result of them being a curious and biological organism. So I don't where do you draw the line with something being artificial and not? It's all, everything is part of the natural world. It's just whether or not it is beneficial or not.
So, Constantine, have you written any degenerate literature or poetry?
A lot, and I was heavily criticized several years ago on the forum and Scotty forum. Yeah, people attacked me left and right. We can still find some.
Oh yeah, there was the I think what was the poem you made about the Aryan woman, or whatever. That's like a contemporary classic.
Naked Aryan woman. Yes,
you're right.
Well, that was one of them, and there were several short stories that I wrote, like this one called The Story of I. I think it's I, like I am, not like the I that you see with. So you can check it out. You can find it online. It's pretty degenerate. So, because I used to be obsessed with the Beatniks, especially William Burroughs, experimental literature.
Oh, someone compared... James O'Meara compared my book, Journey to Vapor Island, to Burroughs' Naked Lunch.
Naked Lunch is a masterpiece. I haven't read your book yet, unfortunately, because I haven't received it, so I can't make the comparison, but I'll definitely do it when I get it, because I know Naked Lunch quite well.
And with you, Ashley, you're not as bad as the rest of us, but you did write that article defending that gay movie that conservatives hated that took place in Italy.
Yeah. Nobody's ever called me a degenerate directly to me, I don't think, because I just keep a pretty low profile, I guess. But yeah, I can imagine. I would be called a degenerate a lot if I had a profile as large as yours or Brandon's even.
But it is funny though, because remember, like the a lot of those people though, they're such hypocrites, really. And if they were like, you know, more in touch with themselves, like they, that's what like so much of this stems from. Because if you look at the trad youth, remember, like they kind of attacked me for being like a degenerate and for in all of this kind of thing. And look at what they were doing in their own personal life. Like that, you know, the dude was ended up like. Had to resign and disband from his own group because of that, like, that sex scandal with this white, like...
Was that the Jerry Springer accident?
Oh, yeah, right.
Yeah, like the cuck box, and it's like, if he would have just, like, you know, if from the beginning they would have just been, you know, more open, then that wouldn't, it wouldn't have even been a big deal. It would have just been a funny thing. But because they had such a rigid, because they had such a rigid thing, you know, they couldn't live up to their own kind of a ridiculous standards.
Constantine, do you like degenerate avant-garde films such as Othello, which is based on
yes.
the work of de Sade?
Yeah, I've seen it. I love them. I also love de Sade, the books, so yes, I'm a big fan.
Yeah, de Sade was an important philosophical figure, but wasn't he more kind of the father of, like, the... He's the father of, like, sexual libertinism, but he's considered more of an icon of the left?
Well, yes, but I kind of appreciate what he did, because he was basically fighting against, like, very restrictive social norms that were prevalent in France at the time, and I think he was, yeah, also, I think he was freed from the Bastille, from the prison, when the French Revolution broke out, and I have some sympathy for the French Revolution, so therefore I have some sympathy for him, and also for the ideals that the revolution represented, because they weren't all negative, in my opinion, you know. So I think mostly progressive, if we forget about the equality stuff. So, but like overthrowing like the feudal order was a necessary step in the right direction.
Yeah, I basically agree that there, like, I don't totally reject the Enlightenment, and there are some good things that came out of classical liberalism, like freedom of speech. As far as like libertinism, I noticed that the left used to claim to be libertines, but with the whole modern-day SJW scene, there's this very strong kind of neo-puritanical streak. It's like puritanical degeneracy, like the stuff like affirmative consent, and it's like... They talk, on one hand, they talk about like being polyamorous, but then they have all these like limitations on what you can and can't do, or what you can and can't say. So, I mean, they're definitely influenced by America's puritanical streak.
Yeah, I agree.
I agree. I mean, you can identify as all of these kind of crazy, you know, weird. Sexual identities and do all of this kind of do all this weird modification to your body, but at the same time, like, you know, if you say like you know, hello to a girl and it's like unsolicited, well, that's like, you know, that's like a big no-no, you know, or something like that, right? If you or if you even the new thing is like if you you know, if you stare at a girl's body or something like that, even that is some kind of a social infraction or something, like, even if she's dressed provocatively or something. You know, I think there was a situation. Someone made a post on Twitter. This girl was like, you know, if you're a girl, please retweet this. If an older man has ever stared at your body and made you uncomfortable, and I was like, well, no, this hasn't happened to me, but I've certainly done it, you know, to others. Like, so.
Yeah, if you go to the beach in, like, a string bikini, don't, like, freak out if, like, guys are staring. I mean, come on. But anyhow,
What's the point of wearing a string if you don't want to be stared at?
Or another thing is, like, I see parents, like, taking their, like, teenage daughters to the beach in, like, string bikinis, and they allow their daughters to dress that way. But if an older guy looks there, that the parents are like horrified. They're like, "Come on, like, what do you expect?"
Yeah, they shame you and give you like a stern look or something. It's like, well, you know, hey, like, yeah, I'm totally, you know, I think you should be respectful. You shouldn't ever like grab a woman or something without her consent or like touch her.
But I'm not
her.
Even
but
talking.
It's like, come on, you can just go like checking them out.
Yeah,
like,
just checking them out.
Get real, like.
Like that's. Perfectly fine, but anyhow, we're getting towards we're basically at the end of the show. I think I want to do a second part later on. So in our second part, I think we should focus more on economics and maybe some continue with some of the aesthetic issues, but I guess focus a lot. I would like to get more into the sort of economic dynamics. I would like to thank Brandon Adamson, Konstantin von Hoffmeister, and Ashley Messinger for being on. It's been a really great show.
Yeah, thank you very much. It was my
pleasure.
Thanks, guys. Thanks.